So tonight I wanted to do things a little bit differently than we normally do, at least in terms of order of operations. Tonight's topic is metta, or loving kindness, which I consider to be both a noun and a verb. It's both a concept and a physical action that we can do. And so I thought it would probably make a little bit more sense to have the Dharma talk first and then practice the meditation, instead of starting with the meditation and then having the Dharma talk like we normally do. This way the meditation might be a little bit more meaningful, or it might just make a little bit more sense in case you've never practiced metta before. But if you've been attending Insight Santa Cruz, whether it's in person or via Zoom, there's a pretty good chance you've practiced metta before, but maybe not. So maybe this is your first time, and that's great. Metta is one of the four Brahma Vihara practices, which are sometimes referred to as the four heavenly or divine abodes. Quite often they're referred to as the heart practices. And the term Brahma Vihara literally means dwelling place of the Brahmas. And in Buddhist folklore, I guess you can call it, Brahmas are considered to be gods or heavenly beings who dwell in this attitude of unlimited goodwill, compassion, empathetic joy, and equanimity. And so those are quite literally the Brahma Vihara practices. We have metta, which is, of course, in the Pali language and can be understood as loving kindness or goodwill or well wishes. There's karuna, or compassion. There's mudita, or empathetic joy. And then there's upekkha, or equanimity. And over the next few weeks, we're going to be covering each of these Brahma Vihara practices in more detail. But we start with metta because it's one of the most fundamental and important Buddhist practices. Metta involves cultivating and strengthening this heartfelt wish for the well-being and true happiness of both ourselves and others. So it's this practice of generating goodwill. And this is super important because goodwill is the underlying motivation that led Siddhartha to search for awakening and to teach the path of awakening to others. Siddhartha, after he became enlightened, he wasn't quite sold on the fact that he should even teach this practice to other people. He had a lot of doubt about that, so he didn't immediately start teaching these practices, and he didn't know how others were going to respond. You know, he knew that there's a lot of people that just weren't going to get it, but he did also know that there were some people that would. He knew that most people have dust in their eyes and it's going to prevent them from seeing clearly. And in a moment of doubt, he had this realization that some people do have less dust in their eyes. And those are the people that are going to benefit from these practices. And these are the people that could eventually remove that dust to see clearly. So, you know, even though he couldn't help everyone, even if he could help some, he knew that it was going to be worthwhile to teach these practices and everything that he learned to become an enlightened being. So, you know, after he became enlightened, he wasn't just like, all right, I'm enlightened. Good luck with the rest of you. He was motivated by this goodwill to go out and teach these practices to whoever was going to listen. And so metta, as I mentioned, is the practice of generating goodwill or loving kindness. And then the next two Brahma Viharas, which are compassion and empathetic or appreciative joy, are basically the application of this goodwill. So first we generate it and then we apply it. And so when we meet someone's misfortune with loving kindness, we get compassion. And when we meet someone's good fortune with loving kindness, we get appreciative joy. And then there's equanimity, which is the fourth Brahma Vihara. And that's a way to keep the other three in balance so we don't add any additional suffering to whatever the situation may be. We'll have plenty more on those in the next coming weeks. But, again, this is just another reason why we practice metta first. We really can't effectively practice the other Brahma Viharas without first cultivating metta. When I practice metta during a meditation practice, sometimes I can feel the effects of it right away. But for the most part, I view it as kind of a training. So, when I'm in a situation off the cushion or away from my meditation center, and I encounter a situation that can benefit from metta, then I'll know how to practice it. I'll be well prepared. And just so you know that when practicing metta, you may not feel it right away. I want to encourage you to continue practicing with it though, because inside your body and inside your mind, things are happening, whether you notice it or not, and it's absolutely doing something. I've used this analogy in here before. We don't go to the gym and lift weights once and expect to have big muscles, right? We have this faith. I don't use the word faith very often, especially in this practice, but we do have this faith that if we continue to lift the weights, that the muscles will come with time. And the same can be said with our metta practice. For some people, metta does feel really natural. It's easy to practice. And for others, it can be really uncomfortable, especially when we're, accepting metta for ourselves. It can be really, it can feel strange, uncomfortable, maybe even a little bit obnoxious, maybe a little too hippy-dippy for some people even. Metta is often translated as loving kindness, but it can also be understood as friendliness or sympathy or benevolence. And there are certain phrases that we tend to use when practicing metta, like some of the common ones are, may I be happy, may I be safe, may I be at ease. Just a few examples, but you're welcome to create your own phrases and use whatever is most meaningful to you. And traditionally, we offer these loving and kind phrases to ourselves, to a benefactor or a teacher, a loved one. We also offer it out to what we call a neutral person, who is someone we neither love nor hate. And we also offer these phrases out to difficult people in our lives. We include everyone because we understand that just as we have suffering in our lives, so too does everyone else. It could be interesting to see how we feel when sending these loving and friendly wishes to people we have the most difficulties with. But I always remind myself that these people are difficult because of the suffering in their lives. If they had no suffering, they wouldn't be so horrible. So again, even if you're not feeling warm and fuzzy inside when you're doing this practice, it's important to know that you're not doing anything wrong. There really is no wrong way to practice metta, unless, of course, you're sending out the opposite of well wishes and like hatred or ill will. But even if we feel that way about a certain person, even if we have this hatred for a certain person, hopefully we can remind ourselves that, remind ourselves about their suffering. Make it our intention of our metta practice about loving kindness. Regardless of how it actually feels, even if it feels like I can't send this person loving kindness, I hate this person, just do it anyway. Make that your intention. And it's okay to be flexible with this practice too. So you can totally modify it any way that works for you. So as I mentioned before, if there are certain phrases that don't resonate with you, you're free to come up with your own phrases that do resonate with you. If you don't resonate with the phrase, may I be happy, don't use it. Find a phrase that works for you. Some people have multiple phrases. Some people stick with just one. Some people repeat the phrase with each breath, each inhale, each exhale. May I be happy? May I be happy? May I be happy? Others just say it as a way of coming back when their minds have wandered. So they'll say it once and they'll focus on it and they'll focus on it and they'll focus on it. And then when they notice that their mind has wandered, as we know that it does, oh, mindfulness, right? Okay, my mind has wandered. Let's come back. May I be happy? Then they bring it back to that focus. So don't be afraid to try out these different ways of practicing metta. Find something that works best for you. And if you already have a practice that works, awesome. Stick with it and keep going. So I wanted to share with you what the Buddha taught regarding the benefits of practicing metta. And this comes straight from the Pali Canon, which is the ancient collection of Buddhist scripture. And so it says, people who practice metta sleep peacefully, wake peacefully, dream peaceful dreams. People love them. Angels love them. Angels will protect them. Poisons and weapons and fire don't harm them. Their faces are clear. Their minds are serene. They die unconfused. And when they die, their rebirth is in heavenly realms. So there you go. People will love you. Your rebirth will be in a heavenly realm. And your face will be clear. Pretty good. Metta actually shows up in quite a few different Buddhist lists. The one that I often practice with and is in relation to the Brahma Viharas, though, the heart practices. And in a few weeks, I'm going to be offering the talk on equanimity, which is a very beneficial practice when working with the feeling tones. You may remember the feeling tones back in the second foundation of mindfulness, noting pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And equanimity is basically not losing our cool or getting carried away with whatever feeling tone is present. Feeling steady, feeling grounded. More on that in a few weeks. But you know, one of the ways that I've built up equanimity is through my metta practice. So I believe that the Buddha was no dummy. He didn't teach everything that he knew and hope that some of it would stick. He only taught what he knew was important. So the stuff that is useful on the path to freedom, he taught. He knew exactly what to teach and what order to teach it. And, you know, as we've discussed here in the past, that most of these lists we have on the Buddha's teachings are not necessarily meant to be practiced sequentially. You know, you don't have to master the first fold of the Eightfold Path before moving on to the second fold. They're meant to be practiced simultaneously or just whenever it's appropriate. But I have found it quite beneficial to study them in the order in which they were presented because they do build on each other. So by practicing metta with regard to feeling tones, I've been able to build up this foundation that has led me to keep a cool, steady, equanimous mind. And I do this by wishing myself the metta phrase of, may I be at ease. When something comes up and it's unpleasant and I don't want it, I don't like it, I simply take a breath and I say to myself, may I be at ease. And on the flip side, when something's really pleasant, you know, and I want it to last forever, I see that craving, and that clinging starting to arise, I simply take a breath and I say, may I be at ease. So I use the phrase, may I be at ease, because I'm one of those people who had a hard time with metta when I first started practicing it. I was told to use a few different phrases, including things like, may I be happy, may I be healthy. And these things, they, to be honest, they confused me. I know that I can't be happy all the time. And I know that I can't be healthy all the time. So why am I wishing myself something that I know isn't supposed to be? Whether I'm happy or not, though, I know that I can be at ease. And whether I'm healthy or not, I know that I can be at ease. So that just became my phrase. That's what worked for me. But again, that's just my story. May I be happy, I think, is a beautiful wish. And if that resonates with you, please make that one of your phrases. And when I first started practicing, I mean, I couldn't even imagine myself being like honestly happy. I came into this practice with a lot of suffering. And so it felt like a fake request or this unachievable goal. My heart was just so closed off, and there were so many layers to peel back before it finally snuck past the guards, made its way in. That's the thing about metta, it will eventually find its way in. Doing this practice has a softening effect on our hearts. Sometimes it can evoke feelings of love and tenderness and warmth. Other times it can expose difficult, painful, buried emotions. And sometimes it doesn't do anything at all. For years, year, I'm not even kidding. Like for years, I felt like I wasn't doing it right because I didn't feel anything. I mean, I thought I was supposed to feel lighter and happy and everything would feel good. And I wanted it to feel like a drug, I wanted to get high on metta, but it just wasn't doing anything. But eventually it did. I didn't realize that, all of those years of feeling nothing was actually doing quite a bit. The effort of coming back again and again and again and again, it just finally started to show results after some time. I'm not saying it's going to take years and years and years for you. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But again, I'm just sharing my own personal experience with the metta practice. It does take time to develop these feelings. It's a cultivation. It's like when we plant a seed, it doesn't grow right away. We need to give it fertilizer, we need to give it water, we need to give it sunlight. And you have to cultivate the seed before it produces fruit. And now I find it very beneficial to do metta as part of my daily practice. There's a few different ways that I can do this. And one of the ways is by making metta the main object of my meditation. So I'll sit down, let's say for a half an hour, and spend the entire half an hour with the metta phrases that I'm practicing with. Or another way to do it is to just save maybe like the last 5 minutes of my meditation practice for metta. So I'll just do like a normal insight or concentration practice, and then at the very end, offer the metta phrases. And then also just random thoughts, throughout the day, like random moments, I should say, where whenever I feel myself out of balance or unsettled, I'll just take a breath and just may I be at ease and go on with my day. So I think that is a perfect balance with like any other practice that we're working with. I personally am not a Buddha yet. I'm definitely not enlightened. I still have a lot of work to do. And because of that, I know I'm going to have moments where I stray from the path, where I know that my mind is going to wander and sometimes I'm going to follow it. And I don't always practice the precepts perfectly either. I'm not always wise with my words, my actions, and I try. I really do. I try, but I'm not always perfect, and I try to remind myself as often as possible to stay on the path. But when I am being unskillful, I quite often will fuel the fire by allowing those negative voices into my mind. The ones that remind me of how horrible I am, how stupid I am, how unworthy I am, those mean voices. And one of my teachers, Vinny Ferraro, he likes to say, would you hang out with someone who talked to you that way? And if not, why would you talk to yourself that way? Stop hanging out with that person. And we can be so brutal to ourselves. So now when I do catch myself being unskillful, one of the things I do is I immediately start practicing metta. I offer myself those phrases of love and kindness and well wishes, just in an effort to redirect these negative voices into something more positive. I find that cultivating these qualities of the heart, it's such an important part of my practice, just as important as cultivating mindfulness or insight. And it's often said that the insight practices are like one wing of the bird, and the Brahma-viharas are like the other wing. A bird requires both wings to fly correctly. And the Buddha even suggested on many occasions that if all you did was fully develop these Brahma Viharas, that would be enough to lead you to awakening, to enlightenment. And so we practice metta, often beginning with ourselves. And this can be an interesting and often uncomfortable practice for a lot of people. It can almost feel like a selfish act to start with yourself, but in reality, it's actually quite the opposite. I often tell people who feel this way that you can't pour from an empty cup. I'm sure we've heard that phrase before, but it's true. I mean, we have to take care of ourselves if we expect to be able to take care of others. There's this well-known motivational speaker by the name of Jim Rohn, and he says, "The greatest gift you can give to somebody is your own personal development. I used to say, if you will take care of me, I will take care of you. Now I say, I will take care of me for you if you will take care of you for me." Isn't that beautiful? I love that. Love that phrase. There's also a quote, often gets miscredited to the Buddha, and it goes like this. It says, "You can search throughout the entire universe for someone who is more deserving of your love and affection than you are yourself. And that person is not to be found anywhere. You yourself, as much as anybody in the entire universe, deserve your love and affection." And this is actually a Sharon Salzberg quote from early 1980s. A lot of people give credit to the Buddha for that one because it's actually a twist on what was originally written in the Pali Canon and translated by Bhikkhu Tanissaro, which goes like this. "Searching in all directions with one's awareness, one finds no one dearer than oneself. In the same way, others are dear to themselves. So one should not hurt others if one loves oneself." So the purpose of this quote is to emphasize having loving kindness towards others. Sharon Salzberg's version has been reversed to suggest that because others deserve love, so too do we. And the twist on the original is interesting because it points to this need for self-metta. It seems to be predominantly or largely a Western world problem. In fact, when Sharon Salzberg asked the Dalai Lama a question about how to deal with, you know, self-hatred, he was totally baffled. He looked at her and he didn't quite know how to process the question or how to respond. It never crossed his mind before that someone might hate themselves. You know, so I can see the reason why she decided to alter the quote. So if you set the intention to practice metta on a regular basis, I think it's great to include all categories of people to focus on. But sometimes it is okay just to focus on sending metta to ourselves or to an individual person. It's not an all or nothing practice. As we look at our relationship to impermanence in this life, we can see that clinging is a direct cause of suffering. And we suffer when we resist the aging process. We suffer when a relationship ends. We suffer when we lose a loved one or lose a friend. We aren't ready to say goodbye yet. We suffer when we crave for things to be different than the way that they are. And we can see this by bringing awareness to our feeling tones. So if something is unpleasant, we crave for it to go away. If something is pleasant, we crave for it to last forever. If something's neutral, we tend to crave for it to be different because we want some stimulation. Neutral is boring. It's actually not, but we often interpret it that way. These are all ways that we can suffer as a result of our minds as creating stories initiated by these feeling tones. And so we begin to bring awareness to the feeling tones, and instead of letting the negative tendencies of the mind take over, we intervene and we replace the negativity with loving and caring wishes for ourselves. We're retraining the mind to embrace change with kindness. So it's said that the Buddha first taught metta to a group of 500 monks who went into a nearby forest for a three-month retreat during the rainy season. And the forest was adjacent to this village of supporters who offered to build 500 huts for the monks to stay. And they also were happy to keep the monks' alms bowls filled during their practice period. And so the monks moved in and began practicing their insight meditation in this forest. But soon after the monks moved in, the forest devas, who are again believed to be like godlike beings in this Buddhist folklore, these devas became fearful of the monks who appeared to be taking over their home. And so the forest devas, they began creating these frightening sounds and creating these terrifying sights, and they began to emit these very distasteful odors, and hoping that, you know, all of this would make the monks leave what they considered to be their forest. And their plan was working too. Soon after the monks encountered these experiences, they became quite terrified or frightened, and it broke their concentration and disrupted their mindfulness. Some even developed fever and pain and dizziness. They actually had like physical reaction to the fear that they were experiencing. And so they all got together and they all agreed that it was going to be impossible to continue practicing where they were. So they went to where the Buddha was staying, and they explained to him, you know, exactly what was happening. And the Buddha responded by saying, "My beloved monks, go back to exactly the same forest and practice your meditation there." And the monks were kind of bummed. They were like, "That's your response?" So they explained to him like what was going on. They're saying, "It's impossible for us to practice there. We're terrified. We can't concentrate when we're so scared." And so the Buddha responded. He says, "Dear monks, because you went there to practice meditation without a weapon of protection, you have encouraged many distractions and difficulties. This time, however, I will give you a true weapon of protection." And that's when the Buddha offered them the metta teachings and the practice. So out of their great respect for the Buddha, the monks decided to trust him, and they did return to the forest, this time armed with metta. And for a while, they did continue to experience feelings of fear and anxiety, and while at the same time, they diligently practiced their metta. And soon, there were no more fearful sights or sounds. The devas, who had previously been hostile towards the monks, they felt the metta that the monks were cultivating for them, and their anger and their resentment actually disappeared. And in fact, feelings of respect and welcome and even reverence began in the devas' experience, along with the sense of being connected, like with a family. And the inclination aroused to actually provide an environment of safety. And so they ended up protecting the monks from particular dangers that might be lurking in the forest. And they did this so that the monks could practice meditation peacefully. So this went on for the duration of their retreat. And it said that all 500 monks continued to practice insight meditation along with metta. And it said that all 500 of these monks eventually became fully enlightened beings during this rainy season retreat. You know, I take these stories with a grain of salt, but I always really, really appreciate the underlying message, and especially this story because it's so relatable. I mean, how often have we been scared in the past? You know, I certainly can remember how nice it feels when we can be comforted with love and kindness, and it quite often will reduce the fear that I'm feeling. And this can be achieved with a metta practice. In a few minutes, we're going to begin our own metta practice here. It's going to be a guided meditation, and I'm going to use some of the very basic and short form versions of the phrases. They're very, very effective. But before we do that, I just wanted to share with you some of the other phrases that you can use in case the ones that I offer aren't resonating for you. So again, you feel free to use these, feel free to come up with your own, but just some examples you can use are, May I be free of danger. May I have mental happiness. May I have physical happiness. May I have ease of well-being. May I feel protected and safe. May I feel contented and pleased. May my physical body support me with strength. May my life unfold smoothly with ease. Some longer form versions. May I be safe and protected from inner and outer harm. May I abide with happiness of heart. May I be healthy, or if that's not possible, may I accept my limitations with grace. May I live with ease of well-being in relationship and livelihood. And then there's the short form versions are tend to be a little bit easier to remember. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be at ease. May I be free from suffering. So now we have an opportunity to practice metta and see if we can use what we've just learned to cultivate some goodwill. And I know we've been sitting for a little while now, so I'm going to recommend that you either stand up or stretch your legs, move around, do whatever you need to do to find a comfortable way to sit, probably for the next 30 minutes or so, a bit longer than we normally sit. So I do want to invite you to find a way to sit comfortably. And when I say comfortable, I mean it. When practicing metta, you know, we're trying to generate this goodwill, this loving kindness, this positivity. And that can be, you know, a difficult feeling to cultivate when we aren't comfortable. So for other meditations, yeah, it is super helpful to sit through the discomfort at times, of course. But when practicing metta, give yourself permission to relax. You know, and just as needed, as often as needed, but still retaining the focus, you know, on your practice. So let the body be comfortable and let the mind be focused. So allowing the eyes to close. If that's available to you. If not, like always, we can just downcast the eyes, maybe close them part of the way. Just finding a way to reduce the amount of visual distraction. Settling into your posture, again, finding a comfortable way to sit, something that will be sustainable, but really, allow yourself to be comfortable for this meditation. Again, let's start out by just taking a few long, deep breaths. Inhaling deeply, exhaling completely. Just allowing the body to return to breathe as it normally does. It's bringing some awareness to the body, body sensations, feeling the weight of your sitting body. Perhaps feeling the rise and fall of the chest, abdomen, and stomach with each breath. Now, I invite you to bring to mind someone that is easy to love, either a partner, a pet, maybe a child, someone or something that requires no effort to produce this loving, kind emotion. Just bring them to the forefront of your attention. See if you can sense into where in the body you feel this loving emotion. Where in the body is this love most felt? This is often referred to as the heart space. It may or may not be your anatomical heart. Maybe the area just around your heart. Maybe you feel it in your throat or in your belly. Wherever it is, just see if you can focus on that area and really, really feel the love for this person or pet. I like to imagine that there's a spark or an ember inside of this area. And every time I inhale, I'm giving life to this spark, and it creates a warmth. A fire. And this is love. And every time that I exhale, I'm spreading this warmth, this love to whoever is my object of metta. And so breathing in, I stoke the fire. Breathing out, I spread the warmth. And keep cultivating this feeling, this warmth. Keep the fire going as you now bring yourself into the focus of this practice. Reminding yourself that you are so deserving of your own love, your own kindness, your own friendliness. Going to offer you some phrases you can silently repeat to yourself with the intention of stoking this fire of loving kindness. Again, feel free to use these phrases or come up with your own. And if you don't feel anything right away, that's totally okay. You're not doing anything wrong. Just keep going. So, keeping yourself in the focus of this practice, silently repeating to yourself, may I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be at ease. May I be free from suffering. You can fine-tune this practice in a way that works best for you. Maybe explore with the tempo of these phrases. See how it feels to repeat them slowly, allowing a gap between each phrase. See how it feels to repeat them over and over and over again. Very little gap between. You can use all of the phrases or just pick one of them. May I be happy? May I be peaceful? May I be at ease? May I be free from suffering? Let's take a moment to see how that feels inside. Is it pleasant? Is there some aversion or unpleasantness? Maybe there's nothing at all. What comes up when wishing yourself metta? And if you're having difficulty with offering yourself these phrases, it can sometimes be helpful to imagine yourself as a child. I often invite the 5-year-old version of myself to come and sit on my lap so I can tell him how much he is loved. You can direct your phrases to whatever version of yourself is most receptive. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be at ease. May I be free from suffering. And now invite you to bring to mind a friend or a benefactor, someone who is easy to love, someone who makes you smile when you think of them. And this could be a pet. This may or may not be the same person or pet you brought into mind at the beginning of this meditation. Stoke your inner fire. Bringing this person into your mind and your heart space, you can silently offer the phrases to this person or pet. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be at ease. May you be free from suffering. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be at ease. May you be free from suffering. And again, just checking in to see how it feels to send these wishes to that friend or that loved one. Perhaps that spark is burning nice and warm. We continue to breathe in and breathe out, continuing to cultivate more and more goodwill, kindness, compassion, love. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be at ease. And may you be free from suffering. And now bringing to mind someone you neither love nor hate. Someone you might not even know on a personal level. This could be the person sitting in the car across from you at a stoplight. Person you saw crossing the street. Maybe the UPS driver who dropped off your last delivery. Your gas station attendant. Knowing that this person, just like you, just like your loved ones, they too desire happiness and peace of mind. So we silently offer them the phrases. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be at ease. free from suffering. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be at ease. May you be free from suffering. Seeing what it feels like to offer this neutral person these phrases. Maybe it's starting to feel a little bit different. Maybe not as easy. Maybe it doesn't come as easily to offer a neutral person these phrases as it does a loved one. Or maybe it does. Maybe we need to restoke that fire. Cultivate the loving kindness, the well wishes, and keeping this neutral person in mind, offering them the phrases, may you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be at ease. May you be free from suffering. And because this practice is meant to include everyone, I'm going to invite you to bring to mind someone you might consider to be a difficult person in your life. Not the worst person in the world. Maybe just someone who annoys you a little bit. Maybe someone who made you angry recently. And just remember, the most difficult people in our lives are normally the ones who are suffering the most. Can we meet that suffering with some goodwill? And even if it's difficult, I invite you to try. Just try offering these phrases to that difficult person. See what comes up. Again, and I encourage you to not jump in the deep end with the most difficult person in your life. We can start light, dip the toe in the water and see how it feels. We can always start light and add to it as we progress. So bringing a difficult person to mind with the intention of offering them these well wishes and hopes of ease and peace and loving kindness, offering them the phrases, may you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be at ease. May you be free from suffering. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be at ease. May you be free from suffering. We don't need to fully forgive and love this person for the long term. Let's see if just in this moment we can set aside our memories of why this person is difficult. See if we can just offer them some metta. I often use a similar technique to what I use on myself when I'm offering myself metta. I try to picture this difficult person as a young child. You know, back when they were pure, back before they were this difficult person that I know today. And I can offer that image of the person, these phrases. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be at ease. May you be free from suffering. Now take a deep breath as we move away from this metta practice, and once again returning to the breath as our anchor. And just taking a moment to reflect on this practice, what came up, what was easy, what was difficult. Trying not to criticize your experience. Just be kind and know just whatever was showing up is your experience. And even just attempting this practice is so noble, such brave work. Breathing in, we can calm the mind. Breathing out, we can relax the body. Breathing in, calm the mind. out, relax the body. Just want to thank all of you for being part of my Sangha and part of my practice. May we all be free from suffering.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.